Israeli settlers backed by regime forces stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds. Local officials in the Gaza Strip are assessing the damage to thousands of buildings following the recent Israeli onslaught on the besieged territory. And supply convoys of the U.S.-led coalition come under roadside bomb attacks at three different locations in southern Iraq. Good to have you with us. Israeli settlers backed by forces have stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound on the third day of a ceasefire that put an end to 11 days of aggression on the Gaza Strip. The settlers were directly allowed by the Israeli military into the compound that's normally closed to non-Muslims. Our correspondent Ramallah Mona Kandil provides us with some more details on that raid.
What happened this morning is that dozens of Israeli force of Israeli settlers raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque after the morning Fajr prayers, with the, of course, the protection of Israeli forces. We are speaking about some 125 Jewish settlers raided the Al-Aqsa complex in groups. The Israeli forces have deployed more forces around the Al-Aqsa Mosque and in Jerusalem, Al-Quds Old Town, in order to prevent Palestinians who are under the age of 45 from entering the Al-Aqsa Mosque, in order to prevent them from standing against the Israeli settler raids to the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex. Of course, the Israeli forces attacked the Palestinian worshippers there. They first arrested four guards of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They released three of them, however, they are still holding one of the Palestinian guards of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Three Palestinians were also detained who were among the worshippers. There are calls for more raids by the Israeli settlers. They raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque from Al-Maghariba Gate. This Maghariba Gate is closed by keys who were owned by the Israeli forces since the occupation of Jerusalem, Al-Quds, the eastern part, in 1967.
The Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad Movement has sent a congratulatory letter to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution as regards the victory of the Palestinian resistance. In his letter to Ayatollah Khamenei, Ziad al-Nakhala said that the 11-day battle between Israel and the resistance in the Gaza Strip resulted in the defeat of the regime. He said the victory helped the Palestinians appear more powerful in the eyes of their enemies. Nakhala said that Iran's unwavering and all-out support played a major role in the success of Operation Al-Quds Sword. Authorities in the Gaza Strip are assessing the damage to residential buildings caused by 11 days of Israeli air raids and shelling on the besieged territory. Officials say that their assessments include over 1,100 buildings which have been flattened completely in the bombing campaign. 900 buildings were also severely damaged and beyond repair, while another 15,000 sustained varying degrees of damage. Officials say that government offices in the Gaza Strip would release their request for removing the rubble. They're facing a lack of funding and equipment in the rubble removal work.
We are faced with many difficulties in the clearing work. The first is the risk that the damaged buildings might collapse. The second is the lack of equipment, including both manual and mechanical equipment like excavators and rammers. A lot of the equipment available here are old and unsafe for workers.
Gaza officials also say that they are searching for possible bodies of victims from under the rubble. The Israeli war in Gaza ended after a ceasefire came into force early Friday morning. At least 279 Palestinians were killed, including 69 children, since May 10th. The UN has called for an end to the Israeli blockade on Gaza. Political commentator Jamal Jumma believes that Israel targeted vital infrastructure in Gaza in an effort to make the Palestinians pay a heavy price for resistance against the regime's atrocities.
Well, I think the damage this time is much more bigger even than 2014. We are talking about 1,800 apartments that has totally damaged, and another 16,800 are partially damaged, which means that it can't be used anymore. 66 organizations, you are talking about mosques, churches, created like in a huge like refugee problem with over 60,000 refugees in our schools. The infrastructure, there will be a very serious problem with the water because we see that how they bomb even this infrastructure, the streets, the sewage system, the electricity. So what they were trying to do in Gaza, they want to make Gaza pay a heavy price for the victory and for confronting the Israelis and the victory for as a response to what's happening in Jerusalem.
Scuffles have broken out between UK police and protesters who had gathered in central London in solidarity with the Palestinian people. Police arrested a number of protesters who rallied in front of the Israeli embassy to express their anger at the regime's crimes against the Palestinians. They chanted Free Palestine and called for an end to the Israeli occupation. They argued that Israel is a modern colonialist. Similar events have been held in other parts of the world in support of the Palestinians. People have staged rallies in the U.S. city of San Francisco, the Lebanese capital, Beirut, as well as the French capital, Paris, to celebrate the victory of the Palestinians in the face of the recent deadly aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
For the second week in a row, a march in Paris for Palestine has been banned by the French authorities. The only authorized demonstration was a static gathering, but these restrictions had at least one positive outcome. It temporarily unified a broad spectrum of organizations. Trade unions, political parties, and many associations demonstrated all together against the Israeli war crimes and in favor of the Palestinian resistance. Long time not seen. The protesters also blamed the complicity of French President Macron with the Israeli war crimes.
It's totally hypocrisy. The French government does not condemn the colonization and the ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem. The French government only condemns Palestinians when they defend themselves. Now there is a generalized outrage of all the Palestinians in Gaza, in Jerusalem, in the West Bank, in occupied cities since 1948, and in the refugee camps. Today, all these organizations act together to support the Palestinian resistance.
Many protesters salute the recent ceasefire concluded between Israel and Hamas, but they say it's a very temporary and partial ceasefire.
We're all happy about the ceasefire, but this doesn't fix all remaining problems. The colonization of Palestine by Israel has to be stopped, the political prisoners have to be released, and the apartheid policy has to end. It's a shame for the entire world. Macron said that Israel has the right to defend itself. It's a scandal. You don't defend yourself by killing children.
French President Macron indeed condemned the rockets fired by Hamas by saying that Israel has the right to defend itself. At the same moment, entire families and children died in Gaza under the Israeli bombs. His statement scandalized a lot of people.
We all want sanctions against Israel, divestment and boycott of Israeli products so that pressure will increase to stop the colonization of the Palestinian territories. We denounce the complicity of the French government with Israel. France is not putting any pressure on Israel. Even worse, France collaborates with Israel economically and militarily.
The international NGO Human Rights Watch called the policy of Israel against the Palestinian population apartheid. These are strong words and a reference to the South African apartheid system decades ago. That system has been overcome by international pressure. Time to do the same with Israel.
The organizers here demand concrete sanctions against Israel from the French authorities and from the European Union. Chris Den Hond, Paris.
A senior member of Yemen's Ansar movement has dismissed new sanctions imposed by the U.S. on two military officials. The head of the Ansarullah Supreme Revolutionary Committee says the sanctions do not frighten Yemeni fighters. Mohammed Ali al-Houthi urged the Saudite coalition to end the six-year offensive and blockade of his country. Al-Houthi warned that the Yemeni army might strike unexpected sites in what he called aggressor countries if they failed to do so. The two targeted Houthi officials have been leading a fight for Yemen's Mara province. The U.S. says that the move aims to de-escalate the fighting and bring a ceasefire. The Ansarullah movement says it does not accept a ceasefire deal as long as the Hodeidah port is under blockade. Supply convoys of the U.S.-led coalition have come under attack at three locations in southern Iraq. The logistic convoys were targeted by roadside bombs in the provinces of Muthanna, Qadisiyah, and Babil. The attacks poorly damaged the vehicles but left no casualties. The incidents occurred hours after a blast ripped through another supply convoy in the Nasiriyah province. No group has claimed responsibility. Attacks on U.S. forces and their supply convoys in Iraq have increased in the past months amid heightened anti-American sentiment. The escalation followed the U.S. assassination of a top Iranian general and a senior Iraqi commander near Baghdad in January last year. The Iranian Parliament Speaker says that the International Atomic Energy Agency is not entitled to have access to images and information recorded by the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran. Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf says that the three-month deadline set for the IAEA expired on May 22nd. Therefore, the agency has no right to access footage and information recorded by Iranian cameras. In February, Tehran, the agency reached an agreement during a visit by IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi. Under the deal, it was agreed that Iran record data pertaining to some of its nuclear activity and keep it for 3 months. The two sides agreed that Iran would share the data with the IAEA in case sanctions against the country were removed in 3 months. Otherwise, Iran would erase the data forever. Grossi is to take part in a press conference later today. The coronavirus pandemic is surging through India, with the country reporting more infections and deaths. There were 241,000 new cases on Sunday, bringing the caseload to 26.5 million. New daily deaths rose by more than 3,700, and they took the fatalities to nearly 300,000. Despite a growing number of deaths, cases have seen a downward trend over the past couple of days amid partial or full lockdowns in most states. India has struggled with a health crisis since April, when a more virulent second wave of the infections hit the country. The vaccination process is underway, but a campaign is facing major challenges due to limited supplies of doses. At least 21 people have been confirmed dead in a running event in China due to extreme weather conditions. Runners competing in a 100-kilometer cross-country mountain race were caught unawares by extreme weather on Saturday. It happened in the near city of Bayin in northwestern Gansu province. It occurred when freezing rain and gales hit the area of the race's high-altitude stage. Participants suffered from physical discomfort and loss of temperature due to sudden drop in the air temperature. Some of them went missing, and the race was halted. A search and rescue operation got underway following the tragic incident. 151 of the 172 runners are confirmed to be safe. South Korea will invest $450 billion in semiconductor manufacturing over the next decades to become the world's largest producer of the key electronics component. President Moon Jae-in, visiting factories in Seoul, announced the government will offer massive tax breaks to the country's chip makers, which account for 20% of the exports in the country's export-led economy. Frank Smith reports.
South Korea's betting big on semiconductors, with the country's tech giants investing billions of dollars in new plants and the government providing tax breaks. South Korean President Moon Jae-in celebrated construction of new facilities last week.
Our companies are taking a further leap.
Over the next decade, Korean chipmakers will invest over 510 trillion won, or 450 billion US dollars. Samsung Electronics will construct large-scale production lines for memory semiconductors and system semiconductors at its factories in Pyeongtaek and Hwaseong, and SK Hynix will establish a large-scale production base in Yongin.
This year, a shortage of semiconductors caused production delays and suspensions worldwide. Even South Korea's major car manufacturers Hyundai and Kia had to shut down periodically for lack of the key component.
South Korea produces about 20% of the world's semiconductors. The industry also plays a very important role in the South Korean economy, accounting for 20% of the country's exports. And recently, the price of semiconductors has been quite high, increasing profitability.
Samsung is South Korea's largest company and number one semiconductor producer. But its de facto chief, Lee Jae-young, is in jail, creating a degree of uncertainty amid the massive investment plans. Samsung's Lee Jae-young is scheduled to complete his 2.5-year prison term in July 2022 for bribing South Korea's former president. But calls are growing in many sectors, including almost two-thirds of the general public, according to a recent survey, for Lee to receive a presidential pardon, considering his company's importance to the South Korean economy. Samsung is also reportedly planning to construct another U.S. plant with a $17 billion investment. President Moon this week visits the U.S. as American officials seek to reduce tech dependence on China. Frank Smith, Seoul.
That's all for this broadcast from Tehran.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on May 7, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of the International Al-Quds Day. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, in his speech on the occasion of International Quds Day, referring to the change in the balance of power in favor of Islamic world and Palestine, emphasized, "I tell you with confidence the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and will not stop."
Today, hope of achieving victory is stronger than ever. Today, the balance of power has swung in favor of the Palestinians. The Zionist enemy has become weaker year after year, while its army, which used to describe itself as the army which will never be defeated, has turned into an army which will never taste victory after its debacle in the 33-day war in Lebanon and its experiences in 22-day and 8-day wars. As for its political condition, it has been forced to hold 4 elections in the space of 2 years. In terms of security as well, it continuously tastes defeat. Moreover, the increasing desire among Jews to emigrate from that land has become a source of embarrassment for that overconfident regime.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Its serious endeavor to normalize relations with a few Arab countries with the assistance of the US is another sign of the decline of that regime. Of course, this will not help that regime in any way either. Tens of years ago, it established relations with Egypt, but since then it has become much weaker and much more vulnerable. Therefore, will the normalization of relations with a few weak and small countries be able to help that regime? Of course, those countries will not benefit from the relations either, as the Zionist regime will transgress against their properties and their land, and it will promote corruption and insecurity in their countries. Of course, these truths should not make others forget about their heavy duty.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Israel has launched a massive bombing campaign against the Gaza Strip in what is undoubtedly the most brutal offensive since the 2014 war. As Israel enters its second week of indiscriminate bombings, hundreds of Palestinians have been martyred and many more wounded, with figures climbing into the thousands of injured. The collective mainstream media and Western governments have attempted to portray the onslaught as a mere crisis and to provide cover for Israel's crimes. On this program, we seek to expose those crimes and report the real story that Israel doesn't want you to see. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. On May 10th, 2021, Israel began an offensive against the Gaza Strip, bombing the Palestinian enclave by land and by air. For several weeks prior, tensions were growing rapidly in occupied Palestine as Israeli forces cracked down on Palestinian protesters. The protests first began at Damascus Gate in Jerusalem as a result of restrictions that Israel had imposed on Palestinians during the holy month of Ramadan, as well as Israel's plans to evict Palestinian families living in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Earlier that day on May 10th, Israeli forces stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque, firing tear gas and rubber-coated bullets at Palestinians while they were inside praying, leaving over 90 people injured. Israel's desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the third holiest site in Islam, drew widespread condemnation and rebuke from Muslims and non-Muslims alike. As a result, the Palestinian resistance group Hamas, which is also in power in the Gaza Strip, issued an ultimatum demanding that Israel immediately withdraw from Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israel ignored this, and Hamas responded shortly thereafter with rocket fire. Israel then began an offensive against Gaza, launching several airstrikes which have continued every day since May 10th. Thousands of Israeli reservists were called up, and there was a genuine fear that a ground invasion was about to take place. Just like in previous wars against Gaza in 2009 and 2014, Israel has been purposely targeting public and health infrastructure in Palestine. This is a war crime under the Geneva Convention. As a result of Israel's bombings, the only salination plant in the Gaza Strip has been put out of action. The only clinic that is able to carry out COVID-19 tests has also been damaged. 6 out of 10 electricity lines have been cut. As if the electricity situation wasn't already bad enough to begin with, people living in Gaza can get barely 4 to 5 hours of power a day. According to the Palestinian Water Authority, water supplies in Gaza have now been reduced by 40% as a result of the Israeli bombardments. Gaza's water infrastructure has been hit so severely that human waste and sewage are now overflowing onto the streets. Israel has also bombed the main roads that lead to Al-Shifa Hospital, making it more difficult for the wounded to reach the biggest hospital in the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Health Ministry reported that one of its clinics was put out of action. Doctors Without Borders also reported damage to their clinic, and there are photographs all over Gaza of roads completely decimated. Health workers and residents alike describe horrific scenes of seeing loved ones and neighbors buried alive under the rubble, of digging out the deceased from underneath twisted metal and slabs of concrete. The result of Israeli warplanes indiscriminately bombing Gaza. A nurse at Al-Shifa Hospital told Al Jazeera that she had, quote, never seen anything like this in her life. There were body parts collected on hospital beds and unbearable scenes. On May 15th, an Israeli airstrike hit the offices of the Associated Press and Al Jazeera in Gaza. There were no deaths or injuries. However, despite several pleas from the Associated Press for Israel not to bomb the building and to allow them to gather belongings, they were ignored. And the entire 12-story building was leveled by Israeli warplanes as the entire world watched it collapse into rubble. Israel is openly bombing the buildings of some of the largest news outlets on the planet, and the so-called liberal democracies of the West say nothing and shrug it off like nothing happened. Videos have been pouring out of Gaza, one after the other, showing entire residential buildings collapsing under Israeli bombs. Within the first week, the number of deaths on the Israeli side has amounted to 10 people. On the Palestinian side, hundreds have been killed and thousands more have been injured. The majority of them are civilians, not Hamas. In the first week alone, Israel killed over 212 Palestinians. 61 of them were children. That's almost one-third of the casualties. I repeat, almost one-third of the casualties are children. The Gaza Health Ministry reports that over 1,400 Palestinians have been wounded. The UN says that over 40,000 Palestinians have been displaced and over 2,000 have lost their homes. And just to give you another idea of the level of cruelty and barbarism enacted by the Israelis, in the same week, multiple Palestinian families were wiped out entirely by Israeli bombs. On Friday, May 14th, the entire Tanani family in northern Gaza was killed by an Israeli airstrike, which completely flattened their home. The next day, on May 15th, 10 family members of the Al-Hadidi family were killed by an Israeli airstrike on the Shati refugee camp in Gaza. And this is always the case. Every single time Israel attacks Gaza, the death toll is incomparable. The number of casualties is always so much higher on the Palestinian side. The Israelis have an air force, they have a navy, they have drones, they receive billions in military aid every single year from the U.S. This is asymmetrical warfare at best, and it's a bloodbath at worst. Joining me is Dina Almouti. She's a trauma-informed clinician and has written extensively for Electronic Intifada. Thanks for coming on. It's a privilege to have you, Dina.
The honor is mine. The honor is mine.
Right now in Gaza, almost one-third of the casualties are children. And we talk a lot about the killed and the wounded, which is horrific in of itself. But what kind of effect does this violence have on the children who survive? I mean, what does that leave them with?
I guess to me, calling it a war simplifies it. There are no two sides in equal defense of each other. It's a merciless genocide that's being committed against people who are unable to leave, unable to get shelter, unable to get medical attention. You know, it's wholesale slaughter, state-sanctioned genocide. And what effect does that have on an entire population, on generation after generation? It's human devastation on an unimaginable scale. I mean, Palestinian children close their eyes and see nothing but devastation. They open their eyes to the same, and they grow up fluent in a language of grief and trauma. Trauma is like a second language to them, essentially. It rearranges their lives. it interrupts it, if you will, over and over and over again, one onslaught after another. Their thoughts run on death, destruction, calamity. Under those conditions, the chronic traumatic stress becomes so, you know, common that it's their normal. You know, the trauma actually embeds itself in their cells. It alters their DNA. And that passes on one generation after another. It actually becomes generational. So talk about like developmental disruption. That's exactly what Israel is intent on, to disrupt lives, to disrupt the normal progression. It wants to constantly have one assault after another to disrupt a normal development from occurring.
So do we have any figures? Do we know what percentage of children are diagnosed? I mean, what about those who are never diagnosed, who may have some trauma or scars? I mean, do we have any idea of these consequences in terms of numbers?
I would tell people to, you know, to turn to DCI, Defense for Children International. They have amazing figures to, you know, they will document a lot of what's happening. But even then, I feel like that's scratching the surface of what's happening. I mean, even children in Gaza right now who are receiving psychosocial care, you know, for what happened during the last onslaught are being killed as of, you know, today and yesterday. And so how do you keep up? How do you keep track of who's suffering?
Regarding chemical, biological weapons, we've seen reports that Israel's potentially been using white phosphorus in the last days, and we know they did in 2009. I mean, what does that do to someone whose body, whose brain is still developing?
Oh, the effect that it would have on, like entire generations are going to suffer immeasurable consequences to their immune system, endocrine system, their neurological system. This is all very calculated. Mind you, none of it is by accident. It's all very, very calculated and by design. These endocrine disruptors will affect fertility. When I was there in 2014, I saw children born with ambiguous genitalia, with all kinds of cancers. This is affecting so much more than just, you know, what you see on the surface. This is a very generational thing designed to destroy generation after generation after generation, all very calculated, and none of it by accident or just to create destruction on a large scale. It's designed to create destruction for generations to come, even in unborn children. It's terribly, it's incomprehensible.
So, you know, Dina, lastly, we've seen a massive general strike all across Palestine, perhaps the biggest in Palestinian history. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Does it make you feel hopeful at all?
I think this is a monumental time in history. We're going to look back, and when people ask, where were you when this or that happened? Were you standing on the right side? Were you standing on the side of the oppressed? Did you choose to make a conscious effort to speak up even when it wasn't as popular or when, you know, wasn't good for your career or what have you? I do have hope. I will always have hope as a Palestinian. I think a lot more needs to be done. We need to see more than lip service. We need more than what's being done, because I feel like this world continues to fail Palestine in every conceivable way, but I do have hope.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Reacting to Israel's latest attacks on Gaza, the response from the majority of Western governments is just as you'd expect. Lackluster at best, and at worst, a complete whitewashing of Israeli crimes. Some European countries thought that it would be a wise idea to take a side, and of course they decided to pander to the Israeli lobby. Czech President Zeman ordered that an Israeli flag be raised over Prague Castle in a show of solidarity with the Israeli occupation, or as most would correctly put it, in a show of hostility to the Palestinians. The Austrian Chancellor Sebastian Kurz also decided to fly the Israeli flag, which was raised over the Chancellery building in the capital, Vienna. Now, to say this was done in extremely poor taste is an understatement. Austria is a neutral country, at least officially, and Vienna has long boasted to be the world's capital of international diplomacy. It's home to one of the United Nations headquarters, the International Atomic Energy Agency, and many other international organizations. And this isn't just about violating supposed neutrality, but this move shows that the Austrian and Czech governments to be on the side of the Israeli occupation, on the side of the oppressors. The United Kingdom's Foreign Minister Dominic Raab condemned Hamas firing rockets at Israel, but of course said nothing of Israel's bombardment of Gaza, which has killed hundreds. This was followed up by a readout from the White House regarding U.S. President Joe Biden's call with Netanyahu, in which Biden reaffirmed Israel's, quote, right to defend itself, whatever that means. Joining me is Jennifer Levenstein. She's a freelance journalist, human rights activist, professor of Middle East studies, and also works with Eyewitness Palestine. Thank you for taking the time, Jennifer. It's great to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jennifer, I want to start out with the Biden administration's response to what's happening now in Gaza. What are your thoughts on what Jen Psaki, the White House spokesperson, said, Secretary of State Blinken? I mean, what did you think of their assessment and response to what Israel is doing right now in Palestine?
I think their responses have been absolutely criminal. And I don't honestly know if they are criminal intentionally or whether these two people are just incredibly ignorant. When you hear the President of the United States saying that the aggressor in a conflict has the right to self-defense, there's something very, very wrong with that response. The aggressor in any military situation is not the one defending itself. So I've been very disappointed both with his response and also with Secretary of State Antony Blinken's response, who said yesterday that there was no equivalence between the Hamas organization and Israel, and said that Israel had the right to self-defense. So once again, he's got it completely backwards.
Okay, so I mean, what do you say to people who would respond that basically, you know, Palestinians, that Hamas, they're the ones who started everything, and that basically they're responsible for any civilian casualties? I mean, what do you respond to people who say that?
I would say that if they're looking at a situation in a very, very short-term setting, that they can possibly come away with that view. But even if they take into consideration the events of the last 2 weeks, Israel is the aggressor. Israel went into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and beat up worshipers during the holiest holiday for Muslims. Israel is expelling citizens from the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. Israel is the one who's backing up Jewish settlers who are running around in East Jerusalem and elsewhere saying death to Arabs, and we're burning Arabs today. Israel is the one that is causing displacement, dispossession, home demolitions, you name it. That is the aggressor. That's not somebody defending itself. The responses to these actions by Israel are resistance. Resistance is legal under international law in whatever form the resistors wish to take.
So, I mean, speaking of international law, at the United Nations Security Council, just in the past week, the United States three times blocked a statement which called for a ceasefire. Everyone else in the UN Security Council was in favor of it. But the United States blocked it because of language that would have condemned Israel's actions. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I call the veto power in the United Nations Security Council, I call it the tyranny of the veto, because, of course, pretty much world public opinion is on the side of the Palestinians right now. It's a very, very small percentage of people who actually support what Israel is doing. For the United States to block any language supporting a ceasefire is a form of tyranny. And it's also, once again, it's criminally sadistic, in my view. we're talking about an action right now that is has led to the deaths of 213 people in the Gaza Strip, 61 of them children, 35 approximately of women. More children have died in Gaza than Hamas fighters. There is something terribly wrong with that. It's all completely against international law because the Gaza Strip is illegally occupied by Israel. That's as plain and as clear as day for anyone who wishes to read international law.
So, I mean, what does that say when, in the middle of all this, the Biden administration, they just approved a new weapons sale to Israel worth $735 million just on Monday, May 17th?
It's my understanding is that it was approved slightly earlier than that. That doesn't change the fact that they are approving more military aid to Israel on top of $3.8 billion of aid every year. And it is in direct contravention of what is called the Leahy Law in the U.S. Congress, which says that it's illegal to give military aid to any country using it to violate the human rights and the civil rights of another people. And of course, this aid is not only violating people's rights, it's murdering them outright.
You know, I think it's extremely sobering what you just said, that more children have died than Hamas fighters. I mean, this is astonishing.
14 families have been wiped out in the Gaza Strip in the last week. 14 entire families. They'll no longer appear on the civil record. That is hard for anyone to imagine, but it is just, it's indescribable to imagine that many people, that many family units just disappearing under the rubble of a bombardment that is so completely illegal and so aggressive, such as it's a crime of evil. I can't think of another word for it.
And just lastly, I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on the motivations behind this, on the Likud party. I mean, do you think that perhaps this is something to do with what's happening internally in Israel with Netanyahu? Do you think there's some ulterior motive that's going on here and not just Hamas, like they claimed?
I do. I think there are two parallel things happening right now. I think the greater goal of Israel is for a greater Israel. It is to have a nation that has no Palestinians in it. It is to isolate Palestinians in the West Bank into 165 disconnected enclaves. That is without doubt. It's a form of ethnic cleansing. Some people have actually started to call this a genocide. At the same time, Netanyahu will do absolutely anything to stay in power, to avoid going to prison. He's a corrupt politician. He's an unethical politician. And, you know, the words to describe somebody like him who is so utterly criminal and without any conscience whatsoever. I mean, he's psychopathic. And his actions, I think, display this. He doesn't care about the deaths of people in the Gaza Strip or the West Bank, or for that matter, in Israel. He doesn't care. He cares about power. And that is something that we should all be very sober about when analyzing this situation.
As Israel continues to bomb Gaza, protests in support of Palestine have erupted all across the world. In London alone, an impressive 100,000 people took to the streets in a show of solidarity. Protesters marched onto the Israeli embassy in London, demanding an end to the Israeli violence, chanting, "Free Palestine," and "Israel is a terror state." A petition on the British government's own website calling on the UK to impose sanctions on Israel received over 300,000 signatures. This means the matter could potentially be raised and discussed in the House of Commons, as the British Parliament usually considers bringing up petitions for debate if they reach a minimum of 100,000 signatures. In France, several protests were held across many cities in support of Palestine. However, a large gathering that was planned in Paris was banned. People still showed up regardless to express their support, but were met with water cannons and tear gas from the French police. In Lebanon and Jordan, dozens of people went to their respective borders with occupied Palestine in an attempt to storm them and cross over. And in another remarkable show of solidarity, Italian dock workers at the port of Livorno refused to load weapons and explosives that were headed for the Israeli occupation, stating that they would not be an accomplice in the massacre of the Palestinian people. All around the world, people continued to show support for Palestine with large protests in several cities across Canada, Germany, and cities all across the world, such as Warsaw, New York, Cape Town, Madrid, Sydney, and many more. Popular support for Palestine is real. It is widespread. It is international and it is powerful. And although many governments do not reflect the will of their people, the average person does know right from wrong. And they're starting to see through the whitewashing of Israeli crimes and apartheid. It is undeniable the public opinion is shifting, and it's shifting in the right direction. It's shifting in support for Palestine. On May 18th, 2021, a general strike was held to protest Israel's crimes in Palestine, and participation was at record levels, with millions of Palestinians taking part from the West Bank to Gaza to Jerusalem to Haifa, Ramallah, Bethlehem, and many more. Shops were closed, people took to the streets, and they marched in protest of Israel's ruthless bombings, of their plans to evict people in Sheikh Jarrah, and all of the occupation in its entirety. Once again, the death toll in Gaza speaks for itself. The bombed out hospitals, clinics, schools, shelters, roads speak for themselves. What Israel is doing is not just horrific, it is evil. No sane or rational person can look at this and call this defense. This is not defense. This is offense. This is aggression. This is a violent, calculated destruction of public infrastructure. It's a massacring of the Palestinian people. Almost one third of the casualties are children. Are they also Hamas fighters? Israel has 10 casualties versus hundreds on the Palestinian side. You cannot inflict 10 times, 20 times more casualties on someone smaller and weaker than you and then pretend that you are the victim. And we constantly hear that Israel has the right to defend itself. Really? What about Palestinians? Palestinians don't have the right to defend themselves when they are being massacred. Palestinians don't have the right to defend themselves from Israeli bombs. Palestinians don't have the right to defend themselves from Israeli occupation. You want us to believe that Palestinians are a threat when they don't even have an air force, a navy, or any conventional armed forces? Israel kills 10 times more people. Israel drops bombs on hospitals, roads, schools. It kills journalists, medics. It levels the buildings of the international press. And you want us to believe that that's defensive and that Palestinians are the problem? You cannot talk about defense when you are in a position of power and you are the aggressor, when you are occupying and colonizing someone else's land. Israel is not a victim, nor is it acting out of self-defense. The Israelis are colonizers. It is the Palestinians who are defending themselves. The Palestinians are resisting Israeli occupation. They're defending themselves and their land from colonizers. This is why Israel tries so hard to smear those who expose its crimes, to character assassinate them, and shift the conversation away from its ethnic cleansing of Palestine and its brutal military occupation, and make it about personal smears. The Israeli lobby spends an awful lot of time and energy waging war against those critical of the Zionist regime. The mainstream media is more than happy to cover for them, and this is why we cannot allow what is happening in Gaza, what has been happening in Palestine for the last 73 years, to be whitewashed and erased by them. Despite the overwhelming support and backing of the West for Israel, people must never be afraid to document Israel's crimes and to expose the true nature of the Zionist regime. The support for Palestine is fundamentally rooted in the defense of human rights, in anti-imperialism, anti-racism, and their cause is a just and noble one. Palestinians need all the support they can get, and we will give it to them. Thanks for tuning in, and long live the resistance. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
this
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, in the previous episode, we talked about a roadmap which the Quran provides every human being, every obedient human being, every individual. As I said, there are two groups of people. One group of people is rebellious. They rebel against God, and the other group of people is fearful. They fear to stand before their Lord. They are those people who, because of fear of Allah, do not commit any sins. So there are two groups of people. Some are rebellious and some are obedient. And of course, as for those people who are rebellious, their abode is the hellfire. And as for those people who are obedient and who protect their souls, who care for their souls, their abode is the Jannah, the paradise. And I also said that God has given us the capacity to tell the difference between right and wrong and between truth and falsehood. And of course, we have not been left wandering on a crossroad. Never. لا إكراه في الدين قد تبين الرشد من الغي فمن يكفر بالطاغوت ويؤمن بالله فقد استمسك بالعروة الأثقى. Of course, قد تبين الرشد من الغي. The right is clearly distinguished from wrong. The truth is clear from the falsehood. That's what the Quran says. And of course, as I said, we are not here to explain or to interpret the verses of the Quran. Of course, I am trying to give you some ideas into what the religious teachings are about a better life. Because at the end of the day, we are going to go to the next world. Our eternal abode is the next world, of course. So when we speak about life, the real life is not this world, the life we live in this world. The real life begins in the afterworld. And so we have to prepare ourselves for the real life, for that eternal abode. And that's why the Quran says, قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ الرُّشْدُ مِنَ الْغَيَةِ. Of course, the right has been clarified and distinguished from the wrong, the truth from the falsehood, of course. And we as human beings have the volition, the faculty of reason. Of course, every individual has been gifted with the faculty of reason. And that is the best capacity, the most important capacity, the most important faculty that distinguishes man from other animals, from other creatures, from other animate beings. The right path is clear from the wrong one, of course. Allah does not force anyone to follow the right path. And He does not compel anyone to traverse the right path. There's no doubt about it. لا إكراه في الدين. There's no compulsion in religion. If Allah were to force human beings, what would be the meaning of justice? Justice would have been meaningless. If He were to force every individual to follow the right path, then hell and heaven, hell and paradise would be meaningless. Resurrection would have no meaning. Because we are compelled, we are like ants, like other creatures who act on instincts. That's not the case with human beings. Of course, human beings have the willpower, the volition, and that makes us different from other animals, from other creatures.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
We are intelligent. We are a volitional creature. We have free will. And these are the two main characteristics that man has. There is a saying, I remember there is a saying from the commander of faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, who says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ خَصَّ الْمَلَائِكَةَ بِالْعَقْلِ دُونَ الشَّهْوَةِ وَالْغَضَبِ وَخَصَّ الْحَيْوَانَاتِ بِهِمَا دُونَهُ وَلَكِنْ شَرَّفَ الْإِنسَانِ. The hadith is lengthy, but because some of our audience may not make sense of the hadith, I would like to just explain, to give the concept of the hadith. Based on this hadith, God has clarified everything for us. He has clarified the road for us, which leads to either hell or heaven. Both roads are clear, and there's nothing in this map ambiguous or murky or dark. Everything has been clarified meticulously by Allah. When you open the map, Allah says, these two entrances lead to either the hellfire or to paradise. Allah says in the verse which I recited, Allah says, "Tagha, tagha, wa athar al-hayat ad-dunya." So these are two major highways that leads to the hellfire. Tagha, persistently, willfully rebelling and transgressing against Allah. And of course, a person who rebels against God and who transgresses the bounds, the limits prescribed by Allah, then of course his eternal abode is the hellfire. And of course, the saying from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, in Allah khassal malaikata bil aql duna shahwati wal ghadab, God the Almighty has distinguished the angels with reason. It means that the angels have reason only, have intellect, aql. Duna shahwati wal ghadab, they do not have lust and they do not have wrath. Ghadab means anger. The angels do not become angry. The angels do not have lust. وَخَصَّ الْحَيْوَانَاتِ بِهِمَا, and God distinguished the animals, the quadruped, the beasts, with shahwa and ghadab. You know, the animals have lust and they have anger. These two faculties are there. But وَلَكِنْ شَرَّفَ الْإِنسَانِ, God honored human being by giving human being both the faculty of reason and shahwa and ghadab, both of them. You can see man has the power, the faculty of reason, and he has lust, he has anger, he becomes angry. Inshallah, we will carry on this discussion in the following episode. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your love is all I need. Soul I need. Soul I need. All I need.
Love is all I need.
Round the world with reporters.
South Korea is betting big on semiconductors, with the country's tech giants investing billions of dollars in new plants and the government providing tax breaks. South Korean President Moon Jae-in celebrated construction of